time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Chronicles, where today we are going to be talking all about Romeo and Juliet, which is here, of course, in my complete works of Shakespeare. For those of you who've been watching this series since the beginning, you'll know that one of the very early conversations that I had was an excellent one where I was able to sit down with AA and pick his brains all about Shakespeare in general, had a wonderful conversation about the histories, something of the tragedies, a little bit of the comedies. It felt like a great introductory episode to Shakespeare. But now I think it's time to return to Shakespeare and we'll start focusing on each play individually. And what better place to begin than Romeo and Juliet? Of course, one of Shakespeare's most famous plays, one of his most performed plays. I think it's regarded as like the second most performed Shakespeare play. Also, of course, one of the most famous love stories in all of literature. Of course, like many of Shakespeare's other plays, he draws upon other texts, other versions of stories, and obviously in many cases from actual histories, in order to create a more definitive and remarkable version of the original. So in the case of Romeo and Juliet, back in 1562, so about 35 years before we have the first performances of Romeo and Juliet in about 1597. So in 62, you had a narrative poem by Arthur Brooke, who wrote the tragical history of Romeo and Juliet. That was in English, but that in itself was a translation of a French version of the story. And that French telling of the story was itself inspired by Matteo Bandello's Italian novella from 1554. And so you can see the story of Romeo and Juliet carrying on from Italy, where of course the play is set, into the theatres of Tudor England. But actually, the story of the Montagues and the Capulets is much, much older. In fact, the first ever mention of these two families comes from Dante in his Divine Comedy, specifically during the Purgatorio section, where Dante says, "Come and see, you who are negligent, Montagues and Capulets, Menaldi and Filippeschi, one lot already grieving, the other in fear. Come, you who are cruel, come and see the distress of your noble families and cleanse their rottenness." This seems to be our first name drop in history of the Montagues and Capulets, which of course leads to enormous speculation on whether or not these two families were in fact very, very famous in medieval or perhaps even older Italy for their feuds and the civil unrest that this feud brought to the streets. But irrespective of the names of the actual families, the tale of two lovers destined to die and their love to turn to tragedy is, of course, a much older trope in storytelling. Probably one of the greatest examples of it comes from classical antiquity in the playwright Ovid's Metamorphoses, where in that play, Pyramus and Thisbe are, again, two lovers from feuding houses and both meet tragic ends. Shakespeare, of course, himself was obviously very, very familiar with Ovid's work, given that Pyramus and Thisbe appear in the play within the play towards the end of The Midsummer Night's Dream, right? It is the play that Bottom and the rest of the actors are preparing for in order to perform for the king. But we shall talk about A Midsummer Night's Dream another time. This is, of course, about Romeo and Juliet. And so, as always, let's begin with the story itself, and then we can unpack it and talk all about it. Two households, both alike in dignity, in fair Verona, where we lay our scene. From ancient grudge break to new mutiny, where civil blood makes civil hands unclean. From forth the fatal loins of these two foes, a pair of star-crossed lovers take their life, whose misadventured, piteous overthrows doth with their death bury their parents' strife. The fearful passage of their death-marked love and the continuance of their parents' rage, which, but their children's end, naught could remove, is now the two-hour traffic of our stage, the which, if you with patient ears attend, what here shall miss, our toil shall strive to mend. Act 1, Scene 1 begins on the street, where Capulet's men, Samson and Gregory, banter and roam with chest-puffing bravado. Espying Montague's men nearby, the two instigate a needless quarrel, and soon sabres are drawn against one another. The fight draws in Benvolio for the Montagues and Tybalt for the House of Capulet. The sound of steel grows louder, and before long, the elderly Montague and Capulet mean to personally defend the honour of their families. The fair street of Verona is now marred by the cacophonous violence. Only Prince Escalus restores order, as Montagues and Capulets drop their weapons. "Rebellious subjects, enemies to peace, profaners of this neighbour-stained steel, will they not hear? What ho, you men, you beasts, that quench the fire of your pernicious rage, with purple fountains issuing from your veins, on pain of torture from those bloody hands, throw your mistempered weapons to the ground, and hear the sentence of your moved prince. Three civil brawls, bred of an airy word, by thee, old Capulet and Montague, have thrice disturbed the quiet of our streets, and made Verona's ancient citizens, cast by their grave beseeming ornaments, to wield old partisans in hands as old, cankered with peace, to part your cankered hate. If ever you disturb our streets again, your lives shall pay the forfeit of the peace. For this time all the rest depart away. You, Capulet, shall go along with me, and Montague, come you this afternoon, to know our farther pleasure in this case, to old Freetown, our common judgment place. Once more, on pain of death, all men depart." The fighters retire, and Montague is left with Benvolio, asking if he has seen Romeo, the Lord's only son. His parents are concerned for him, as he seems stricken with melancholy, but they know not what has caused it. They take their leave of Benvolio, who soon meets with his cousin, Romeo. After prying, Romeo reveals that he is lovesick and tortured by the girl's unrequited feelings. Benvolio advises him to look to other beauties, so that he might move past this sorrow. Scene 2 introduces us to Paris, a young suitor to Juliet, only daughter of the Capulets. Juliet is the darling of her father's eye, and seeing that Paris is a noble man, he gives him permission to woo his daughter at the evening's masquerade. Capulet then sends a serving man forth into the streets to invite the listed guests. But the fellow's a poor reader, and happens upon Romeo and Benvolio, and asks if they can tell him the names of the people he's to invite. One name catches Romeo's attention. Rosaline, the girl that his heart and loins greatly long for. At this same ancient feast of Capulets, sups a fair Rosaline, whom thou so loves, with all the admired beauties of Verona. Go thither, and with unattained eye, compare her face with some that I shall show, and I will make thee think thy swan a crow. Romeo decides that he will go to the mask. In scene 3, we are introduced to Juliet. She is 2 weeks away from her 14th birthday. Her mother, Lady Capulet, and her nurse also attend her in this scene. Her mother broaches the topic of marriage with her daughter, telling her to look fondly tonight on good Paris. What say you? Can you love the gentleman? This night you shall behold him at our feast. Read o'er the volume of young Paris' face, and find delight writ there with beauty's pen. Examine every married lineament, and see how one another lends content, and what obscured in this fair volume lies, find written in the margent of his eyes. This precious book of love, this unbound lover, to beautify him only lacks a cover. The fish lives in the sea, and 'tis much pride for fair without the fair within to hide. That book in many's eyes doth share the glory, that in gold clasps locks in the golden story. So shall you share all that he doth possess, by having him, making yourself no less. Speak briefly, can you like of Paris's love? I'll look to like, if looking liking move, but no more deep will I endart mine eye, than your consent gives strength to make it fly. Scene 4 begins with a troop of maskers, torchbearers and a drummer boy, but the imperishable centre of the party's spirit is Mercutio, the great libertine of Verona. He frolics merrily with Romeo and Benvolio in his company, loquaciously yammering on and on. Benvolio tells Mercutio that his talk is both endless and meaningless. True. I talk of dreams, which are the children of an idle brain, begot of nothing but vain fancy, which is as thin as substance as the air, and more inconstant than the wind, who woos even now the frozen bosom of the north, and, being angered, puffs away from thence, turning his side to a dew-dropping south. They enter Capulet's grounds, where the household and guests mingle with gaiety. It is on that night that Romeo first gazes upon Juliet, love at first sight. Oh, she doth teach the torches to burn bright. It seems she hangs upon the cheek of night, as a rich jewel in an Ethiop's ear, beauty too rich for use, for earth too dear. She shows a snowy dove trooping with crows, as yonder lady o'er her fellows shows. The measure done, I'll watch her place of stand, and touching hers make blessed my rude hand. Did my heart love till now, forswear it, sight, for I ne'er saw true beauty till this night. But not all present at the mask are merry. Tybalt sees Romeo, and is incensed with rage, to see a man of Montague so free about his family's estate. His temper is a storm, but Capulet demands that he must not escalate events, and clearly shows an elder's wisdom, and tells Tybalt plainly that Romeo is welcome. Tybalt's hand is stayed, but he departs with these ominous lines. Patience perforce with willful column eating makes my flesh tremble in their different greeting. I will withdraw, but this intrusion shall, now seeming sweet, convert to bitterest gall. Meanwhile, each second that Romeo and Juliet share in one another's company only leaves them more besotted. They kiss, and their union is destiny itself. The nurse intrudes and draws Juliet away to her mother. Juliet's nursing reveals to Romeo the truth of Juliet's Capulet blood. Juliet then asks her nurse to find out the young man's name. Go, go ask him. If he be married, my grave is like to be my wedding bed. His name is Romeo, and a Montague, the only son of your great enemy. My only love sprang from my only hate, too early seen unknown, and known too late. Prodigious birth of love it is to me that I must love a loathed enemy. They depart, and Act 1 comes to an end. The next act begins with Romeo fleeing from his friends, enthralled by his need to see Juliet once more. Mercutio mocks his feelings for Rosalind and the fickleness of his friend. Then he and Benvolio retire, deducing that Romeo does not wish to be found. We then come to Act 2, Scene 2, the balcony scene. Perhaps the most famous moment of romance in all of literature. O Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo? Deny thy father and refuse thy name. Or, if thou wilt not, be but sworn my love, and I'll no longer be a Capulet. Shall I hear more, or shall I speak at this? 'Tis but thy name that is my enemy. Thou art thyself, though not a Montague. What's Montague? Is it nor hand, nor foot, nor arm, nor face? Oh, be some other name belonging to a man. What's in a name? That which we call a rose, by any other word, would smell as sweet. So Romeo would, were he not Romeo called, retain that dear perfection which he owes. Without that title, Romeo, doff thy name, and for thy name, which is no part of thee, take all myself. Upon hearing the confessions of this maiden's heart, Romeo reveals himself by moonlight in the orchard below. Juliet is frightened that he will be discovered, but the young man is confident in the knight's protective cloak. Romeo seeks to assure her that his love shall be a constant one. Lady, by yonder blessed moon I vow that tips with silver all these fruit treetops. Oh, swear not by the moon, the inconstant moon, that monthly changes in her circled orb, lest that thy love prove likewise variable. What shall I swear by? Do not swear at all. Or, if thou wilt, swear by thy gracious self, which is the God of my idolatry, and I'll believe thee. If my heart's dear love, well, do not swear. Although I joy in thee, I have no joy of this contract tonight. It is too rash, too unadvised, too sudden, too like the lightning, which doth cease to be, ere one can say it lightens. Sweet good night. This bud of love, by summer's ripening breath, may prove a beauteous flower when next we meet. Good night, as sweet repose and rest come to thy heart as that within my breast. Oh, wilt thou leave me so unsatisfied? Well, what satisfaction canst thou have tonight? The exchange of thy love's faithful vow for mine. They both pledge their love, and after the nurse's call has Juliet withdraw and return, the two lovers exchange further words of romance and agree that at 9 o'clock the next day, Juliet will send a messenger to him. They leave each other in the highest of spirits. Scene 3 sees us introduced to Friar Lawrence. He is a tender-hearted man and of sincere piety. Romeo enters the chapel, and the friar quickly deduces that the young man has not slept that night, but mistakes Romeo's nocturnal activities for a night of sin with Rosalind. But Romeo reveals that he now loves another. Then plainly know my heart's dear love is set on the fair daughter of rich Capulet. As mine on hers, so hers is set on mine, and all combined, save what thou must combine, by holy marriage. When and where and how we met, we wooed and made exchange of vow. I'll tell thee as we pass, but this I pray, that thou consent to marry us today. Holy Saint Francis, what a change is here! Is Rosalind that thou didst love so dear, so soon forsaken? Young men's love then lies, not truly in their hearts, but in their eyes. Jesu Maria, what a deal of brine hath washed thy sallow cheeks for Rosaline. How much salt water thrown away in waste, to season love that of it doth not taste. The sun not yet thy sighs from heaven clears, thy old groans yet ringing in mine ancient ears. Lo, here upon thy cheek the stain doth sit, of an old tear that is not washed off yet. If e'er thou wast thyself, and these woes thine, thou and these woes were all for Rosaline. And art thou changed? Pronounce the sentence then. Women may fall when there's no strength in men. Though he is sceptical of Romeo's swiftly changing affections, Friar Lawrence agrees to marry Montague to Capulet in the hopes that such a love match may finally end the feud between their two houses. We then return to the inseparable duo of Benvolio and Mercutio, where we learn from them that Tybalt has challenged Romeo to a duel on account of his daring to visit the Capulet estate yesterday evening. Mercutio despises Tybalt. Romeo meets the two, and they engage in the banter and camaraderie that defines the best relationships between men. As Juliet had sworn, her nurse then comes to Romeo as liaison of the lovers. the nurse has a deep loyalty to Juliet and interrogates Romeo as to whether his intentions are honourable. The dashing young man cools her fears and tells her that if Juliet will meet him at Friar Lawrence's cell that afternoon, that they shall be married. Not only does the nurse rejoice at the news, but tells Romeo that she will see that a ladder is placed at Juliet's balcony tonight so that Romeo and Juliet can share their wedding night together. The nurse returns to Juliet, and after much comical stalling and leaving Juliet in suspense, the young girl hears that her heart's desire is close at hand. Later that afternoon, Romeo and Juliet are wed by Friar Lawrence. Act 3 begins, and we return to the streets, where Tybalt's high temper finally brings about new unrest. He and his Capulet lackeys encounter Benvolio and Mercutio, and he declares his challenge to Romeo. Very soon, the newlywed Romeo appears. Romeo, the love I bear thee can afford no better term than this. Thou art a villain. Tybalt, the reason that I have to love thee doth much excuse the appertaining rage to such a greeting. Villain I am none, therefore farewell. I see thou knowest me not. Boy, this shall not excuse the injuries that thou hast done me, therefore turn and draw. I do protest I never injured thee, but love thee better than thou canst devise, till thou shall know the reason of my love. And so, good Capulet, which name I tender as dearly as mine own, be satisfied. Unable to gain satisfaction from Romeo, he instead fights Mercutio, and the two engage in a wicked duel of wits and blades. Alas, then, that these moments are Mercutio's last, as he bleeds out in the streets of Verona, telling Romeo, a plague on both houses. Romeo is distraught, and wrath grows within him. Though he avenges his friend by killing Tybalt in turn, his wedding day is ruined by his killing of Juliet's cousin. Romeo flees the scene, and the people of the city congregate in the aftermath. Benvolio gives an honest account of events to the prince, who decrees that Romeo is banished from Verona. The Montagues deeply despair. The next two scenes deal with both Juliet's and then Romeo's reactions to this tragedy. Juliet at first assumes Romeo dead, and her sorrow is unrelenting. The nurse corrects her and tells her that Romeo is alive, but has run away from Tybalt's murder. The young girl curses her new husband's name, but then fickly retracts her comments and vows to be ever loyal to her poor husband. The nurse consoles her, saying that she shall still have her wedding night and that she will seek out Romeo. Juliet gives her a ring and the nurse departs. Romeo has fled to Friar Lawrence and becomes inconsolable when the friar tells him that he is to be banished. The elder insists that it is a mercy, as the sentence should have been death, but Romeo rages. 'Tis torture and not mercy. Heaven is here, where Juliet lives, and every cat and dog and little mouse, every unworthy thing, live here in heaven and may look on her. But Romeo may not. More validity, more honourable state, more courtship lives in carrion flies and Romeo. They may seize on the white wonder of dear Juliet's hand and steal immortal blessings from her lips, who even in pure and vestal modesty still blush and thinking their own kisses sin. But Romeo may not. He is banished. Flies may do this, but I from this must fly. They are free men, but I am banished. And sayest thou yet that exile is not death? Hadst thou no poison mixed, no sharp ground knife, no sudden means of death, though ne'er so mean, but banished to kill me? Banished? O friar, the damned use that word in hell. Howling attends it. How hast thou the heart, being a divine, a ghostly confessor, a sin absolver, and my friend professed, to mangle me with that word, banished? The nurse arrives, and after much reasoning, Romeo reclaims his senses, and taking the ring, readies himself for his wedding night with Juliet. In scene 4, we find Capulet, his wife in Paris, speaking in the wake of the family's loss. Tybalt is slain, and their dear daughter mourns for him, or so they believe that to be the reason for Juliet's tears. Capulet, keen to bring some joy to the family and finally settle the question of Juliet's marriage, tells Paris that they may marry on Thursday and believes that Juliet will respect his decision and rejoice. Whilst this conversation occurs, Juliet is with Romeo, but there is much uncertainty for the young lovers as daylight beckons. Shortly after Romeo flees, Juliet is met by her mother, who tells her of the wondrous news. She is to be wed to Paris. Juliet is in anguish, as she doesn't know how to handle this but to politely refuse. Where her mother is stunned, her father is outraged. "Hang thee, young baggage, disobedient wretch, I tell thee what, get thee to church a Thursday, or never after look me in the face. Speak not, reply not, do not answer me. My fingers itch. Wife, we scarce thought us blessed that God had lent us but this only child. But now I see this one is one too much, and that we have a curse in having her. Out on her, Hilding." Juliet's parents both disown her, and even her nurse gently tells her that the only solution is to marry Paris. Act 4 begins with the play's only scene between Juliet and Paris, where the two speak with one another at the friar's cell. Paris is courteous and affectionate, and Juliet is kind but indifferent. When Paris departs, Friar Lawrence devises a plan that will allow sweet Juliet to be reunited with her Romeo. He produces a potion that shall induce a deep sleep, and her family will believe her to be dead. A letter will be sent to Romeo, who is in exile in Mantua, explaining the plan. When Juliet is laid in the family tomb, she will awake, and the two lovers may live out their days away from their family's hate and feuds. Juliet agrees to the friar's plan and returns home, where she meets her father and lies to him. She tells him that she has been to church, asking the Lord's forgiveness for her rebellion against her father's will, that she fully intends to correct her error and regain his love by marrying Paris. Capulet is delighted at the reversal of his fortunes and departs to tell Paris. In Act 4, Scene 3, Juliet delivers a remarkable soliloquy as she ruminates on the choice before her and whether she should drink the potion. There are so many ways it may go wrong, but in the end, for Romeo, she drinks. Naturally, Scene 4 sees her mother, father, and nurse meet with abject horror upon seeing Juliet's seemingly lifeless body. It is the bitterest of days, and the hearts of the entire household are broken by the loss. The wedding is to be cancelled, and all change from revelry to mourning. Friar Lawrence soon arrives and feigns surprise and sadness at this dark turn. The musicians, less concerned by the family's trauma, decide to linger so that they might at least have lunch. Our final act begins with Romeo in his exile in Mantua. His spirits are high until his friend Balthazar tells him that he brings news of Juliet from Verona and of her death. Romeo reacts by saying, "Then I deny you, stars." Romeo is clearly suicidal and affirms that he will rest with Juliet tonight. He visits an apothecary and has a potion mixed for himself. Far off in Verona, Friar Lawrence learns that his letter never reached Romeo, as the messenger was quarantined due to an outbreak of plague. The friar realizes the calamitous consequences and hurries to the Capulet family's tomb. Act 5, Scene 3. Romeo arrives at the tomb, but he is not alone. Paris is also present and has come to lament for Juliet. He spies Romeo and believes that Romeo is the source of Juliet's death and that she died of heartbreak over her cousin Tybalt. Though he does not seek confrontation, no one will stand between Romeo and his perfect death by Juliet's side. He fights and then kills Paris, but respectfully carries his corpse into the tomb. And resigned to his fate, he kisses Juliet and departs from life with these words: "Come, bitter conduct, come, unsavory guide. Thou desperate pilot, now at once run on the dashing rocks thy seasick, weary bark. Here's to my love. Oh, true apothecary, thy drugs are quick. Thus with a kiss I die." Moments too late, Friar Lawrence arrives, all his hopes for the triumph of love and reconciliation in ruin. Juliet awakens, and though the friar tries to draw her away from the tomb, she is adamant that she will die with Romeo. The friar attempts to flee, lest he be apprehended by the watchman, and Juliet takes Romeo's dagger. Hearing footsteps closing in, she says, "Yea, noise? Then I'll be brief. O happy dagger, this is thy sheath, there rust, and let me die." And so she does, falling upon her true love. The prince arrives with Montague and Capulet, who find their only children dead in the tomb. It is a grievous torment for Capulet, having already believed his daughter had died already. Friar Lawrence is brought forward, and he tells all the secrets of their children's hidden love. And after many generations, Capulet and Montague shake hands and make peace, their blood feud dying with their children, who will be immortalized in golden statues, so that their houses may never forget. "O brother Montague, give me thy hand. This is my daughter's jointure, for no more can I demand. But I can give thee more, for I will ray her statue in pure gold, that while Verona by that name is known, there shall no figure at such rate be set as that of true and faithful Juliet. As rich shall Romeo's by his lady's lie, poor sacrifices of our enmity. A glooming peace this morning with it brings. The sun for sorrow will not show his head. Go hence to have more talk of these sad things. Some shall be pardoned and some punished. For never was a story of more woe than this of Juliet and her Romeo."
If you enjoyed this piece of premium content from the Lotus Eaters, head to our website where you can find more.